This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Over the past few months, our station, Vermont Public, has brought together Vermonters with different political views to interview one another. Along the way, they have a chance to discover what they have in common. It's through a program called One Small Step, founded by the folks who do StoryCorps, those intimate, recorded conversations between two people that we sometimes air on Vermont Public. Last week, we held an event at the station for people who want to have more One Small Step-style conversations and connections in their lives. There was a training and then a panel discussion with two pairs of people who had met through One Small Step. We aired the recordings of their conversations and then talked with them live about the process. We were also joined by two folks from an organization with a similar mission of connecting people across political divides. It's called Braver Angels. You regular Vermont Edition listeners might remember our episode with Braver Angels from this past spring. Our panelists are Chris Sims of Jericho, Judy Scott of St. George, Ramona Akposani of Orwell, and Beth Howard of Williston. And for Braver Angels, we have Lincoln Earl Centers of Montpelier and Catherine Cadwell of Fayston. Today, we're going to share our recording of this event with you. Let's take a listen. So now we're going to listen together to a couple of clips from our first two One Small Step conversations. We're going to start with Chris and Judy. They come from different political perspectives, and when they were paired up for a conversation, we expected that they might find some common ground based on their interests and their hobbies. Let's take a listen.
My name is Chris Sims, and I am 66.
I'm Judy Scott. I'm 75.
Could you briefly describe, in your own words, your personal political values?
I would like us to have a government that encourages us to be strong and independent through offering high-quality education, good health care, through demonstrating honesty and integrity, through encouraging community development.
Sounds like a good vision.
What about you?
My primary identification is a follower of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And it's does it align with the teachings of Jesus or not? So that would make me liberal on some issues and conservative on other issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a member of any party. I consider mm-hmm. myself to be an independent. I tend to be more interested in the character of a candidate.
Mm.
And I also look at issues like, is this an issue that takes government to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Like a government can decide whether or not we go to war. What's going to make us a healthier society? Like, if we don't have people who are desperate, then we're less likely to have people who, out of desperation, will do anything to get food on the table for their crying children.
Yeah.
Can we develop a system of enough? We all benefit from having healthy people and healthy food.
Well, I'm interested in how you think we can fix the country, because I see things very much the way you do.
Mm.
And I sometimes feel very troubled by not knowing what to do.
Yeah. I don't want to ask how you vote, but how do you decide what makes a good candidate versus a bad candidate?
What's most important to me is that I have a sense that this is a person of integrity. They're honest. They're interested in something beyond their own political advancement. That they're what they really care about is their community and their world, how the people around them are doing,
mm-hmm.
and how those people can be assisted in making better lives for themselves. I saw so much with refugee resettlement,
mm-hmm.
people who had such difficult lives and yet still had the ability and the energy to come to this totally new and different place, start over again and build that life.
I would love to hear more about how you got into refugee resettlement, mm-hmm. because that's an area that's near and dear to my heart.
I got into it as a volunteer. I heard that the refugee resettlement program was going to be welcoming a new group of people and was looking for host families. So I thought, this is something I'd love to do. We did host a family, and I got more and more involved as a volunteer. After a few months, the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program asked me to start a volunteer program there. So I went on staff and ended up doing having many different positions there. And the end was the director of the program.
So I wonder if I've actually talked to you in that regard, because I've been a volunteer through the Vermont Refugee Resettlement before they changed their name.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, when?
That would be 30 years ago.
30 years ago.
So people had been coming from Bosnia, and we were paired up with a family where I would go once a week and just do English conversational practice.
Oh, great.
And we've donated furniture sometimes, we've donated money sometimes, we've offered to host when there were a lot of Afghan refugees coming in just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The hotels were full and we were able to host a couple of guys for a weekend. Yeah, this is just a wonderful thing that you've done. I'm really, really impressed.
Well, you too. I have a very good understanding that it takes a great deal of flexibility and empathy and kindness and generosity to either take people into your home or to go into their homes and become a support, because nothing trains you for that kind of volunteering.
And dealing with the cultural issues, there have been some rather funny misunderstandings and some that were really pretty hard to deal with. And, you know, some very, very hurt feelings that had to be worked out and gone through. But I think with my parents having been immigrants, and I grew up without relatives around. I had one aunt in the country and everybody else was back in Norway. So my parents adopted family members. So we had a house full of people just coming and going, just all these
really?
Strangers coming through, and they would host anybody for a meal, for an overnight, whatever. And that's just what I came to take as that's normal. You build up your family from the lonely people around you.
Uh-huh. What an amazing way to grow up.
It was. It was.
Yeah. Chris, you and I sound very much alike.
I was thinking that too.
And we'll hear more from Chris and Judy in just a moment. But first, let's learn about Ramona and Beth. When they met here at the station for their first conversation, it was clear from the very beginning that they were a good match. Both were very thoughtful and curious to learn more about each other. And they, too, discovered some common ground along the way. Let's listen in on their conversation.
My name is Ramona Akposani.
My name is Beth.
Beth, what made you want to do this interview today?
Well, I'm deeply concerned about the deep divides in our country, and I guess multiple divides, really. It sort of feels like one giant chasm, but the degree of fear and hate and anger that we seem to be living with in our society, and I think we have to have more in common than it seems, and I'd like to explore what we have in common.
The divide is there, and people don't seem to know how to talk to each other in a way that comes up with, say, that you feel seen or you feel heard, you mm-hmm. know.
I have many questions I would love to ask you, but let me start by asking about your time in the Peace Corps.
The first part of my Peace Corps, I was in Nepal teaching, about 40 students. And it was not what I really wanted. I wanted health care. that I ended up in the country of Niger in West Africa. And there I was working in health, in mother-child health, and working with, you know, infants, working to teach the women how to help their children go from being nursed to having solid food, and to help them with the malaria, help them with tuberculosis, you know, whatever came up. I learned so much there. And I learned there's no one right way to do anything.
Yeah, I can imagine. I guess I'd like to know what you mean by being pro-woman.
Well, I think being pro-life, people get the idea that you don't care anything about the mother or the woman who's involved. But I do. I am very pro-woman in that they need the support. They might need the housing support, or they might need food support, or they might need clothing, you know, anything to say, we see you, we know what you're dealing with, you know, and then maybe you can make a different choice. Racial injustice is one of my really big things, too. I married a man from West Africa, so how do you bring that into your life, and especially living in Vermont here?
At the age of 40-something, I was sort of hit over the head by the realization that racism is alive and well in this country, and simultaneously hit over the head by what a very protected and ignorant white bubble I had lived in all my life. I am an active member of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, and someone in the racial justice work in Ithaca said to me, you find your sphere of influence when it feels like the problem is too huge and you don't know where to start and you don't know what you can do. You find your sphere of influence. And it seemed to me that I was respected and known in my UU community, and it was a place where anti-racism would be a ripe subject. Yeah. And it was. And I became something of a leader in that congregation in that way. I thought going out and trying to advocate and be activists without really understanding deeply would be a big mistake, and that we might do more harm than good.
You say you're liberal, Beth, and that can mean many things to different people. So what does it mean for you?
Good question. I believe that society and government have a moral responsibility to care for the poorest and most challenged among us. And most challenged might mean those with health problems, those with disabilities, those who are oppressed in any number of ways. And that the enormous gap between the richest and poorest seems absolutely obscene to me. I think too much power concentrated in one or a few places is a corrupting influence, and that checks and balances are critical. And I think that America has failed to live up to many of its greatest ideals. And although we've evolved in many ways over time that are good, I also think right now we're sort of going backward in some ways. And it just saddens and troubles me. And I guess I don't have a problem with government taking on certain roles that enable the society to care for its people and its resources and sort of equal the playing field.
I would describe myself as an independent. I've never voted all the way along one party line or the other. You know, I try to vote for the person. Social programs where they are needed. How do they try to even the playing field for people, you know, not going trillions and trillions of dollars into debt again? And the two don't always sync, you know. So I would err on the side of the people, you know.
I am sort of philosophically probably a progressive, but I'm also a pragmatist, and I don't want to live in a country where one side gets its way at the expense of the other side being angry and resentful and feeling like they lose. And I think the only way forward is for both sides or all sides to work together and come to some common ground. You know, I think we need to have more just plain human interaction and sharing of ourselves and our values. And I don't know where that comes from. You know, I don't know how to get there from where we are right now.
We have to take a quick break. When we come back, you'll get to hear the participants reflect on what it was like to have these vulnerable conversations. That's in just a minute on Vermont Edition. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we're airing a live discussion that took place last week at the Vermont Public Studios in Colchester. It was about making connections across political lines through our program, One Small Step. Let's dive back in. I'd now like to welcome our two pairs of local One Small Step participants. And you can come up when I call your name and take a seat right up here. Chris Sims of Jericho, Judy Scott of St. George, Ramona Akposani of Orwell, and Beth Howard of Williston. Let's give them a round of applause when they come sit. Hello. And we also have two special guests from the Vermont chapter of Braver Angels. They're a nonprofit that fosters conversations across political divides. Our two guests are the state's Braver Angels co-coordinators, Lincoln Earl Centers of Montpelier and Catherine Cadwell of Fayston. Well, it was such an honor to get to hear those stories. I just want to thank you all, you four, for your vulnerability and your openness. It is hard to have a conversation like that and then extra hard to share it with a big group of people you've never met. So I learned a lot listening from all of you. My first question for you is why you wanted to do a program that matched you up with a stranger rather than a family member or a friend and kind of helped you have those types of conversations first. What felt interesting or unique about being matched up with somebody that you had never met before? And let's just start here and we'll go down the line.
I think it's almost easier to talk to a stranger because with family and friends, we all have the history, we have the baggage, we have the old battles that might, you know, come to the forefront. But a stranger is sort of a clean slate. And I tend to like everybody until they give me a reason to not like them. So I already like Judy from the get-go.
I'm so glad you asked this question because in thinking about it, I was reminded of an interview I heard on Vermont Public, of course, with E.O. Wilson, the entomologist. He was talking about ants and how when an ant dies, the other ants totally ignore him for a day or two. And then all of a sudden, they pick him up and take him off to their trash heap and dump him on it. So, the reason this connects...
Do tell.
E.O. Wilson hypothesized that there was a chemical that the ant's body emitted as it was decomposing, and the other ants smelled it, and that triggered them to do this. So sometimes I feel that if I talk about things that are important to me, my beliefs, that the person I'm talking to might just hoist me up and dump me on the trash heap of ideas. And so I'm timid. I'm reluctant to actually do that. But One Small Step offered an opportunity for me to talk to someone who I knew would want to listen to what I had to say, who would be interested in why I felt that way, and it would give me the opportunity to really be able to listen and try to understand why someone who thinks it different in a different way from me, why they think that way. So it was a golden opportunity for me.
I did not know where you were going with that metaphor, but you really brought it home. That's impressive.
Ramona, what do you think? Why did you want to do this type of program?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I have a very close family and a very large joint family. And because we're so close and we get together often, I really know, you know, a lot about their views on all of these things. And I have to say also that I love traveling. I love meeting new people. I love meeting people from every kind of culture. So I just, and I'm interested in how we can come to converse, to talk, so that we get to know each other, so that each person feels seen and heard in that. So this was just ideal. This was wonderful. It kind of went along with other things that I'd studied and tried to learn about this process. And so I really look forward just to meeting somebody I didn't know and talking these things through, practicing all of this good information.
Mm. And you met Beth. Beth, what do you think? Why did you want to do this program?
Yeah, I have two answers to your question. Sure. One is that I'm very aware of the fact that I live in a bubble of similarity. You know, everyone I associate with has similar opinions, and many of my close associates have had a similar kind of background, and you know, and so to meet somebody outside my bubble was really important to me. And the second reason that kind of relates to your comment about family is I have a very close, dear family member with whom I have some real differences, and it has been really painful and really hard. And I am amazed at how hard it is because we are so close, and I never would have thought that this would happen in our relationship. And I feel like meeting Ramona was sort of a little practice, you know, a chance to kind of practice my own, exercise my ability to reach across differences, and that, you know, I hope I've learned things that I can bring to that relationship as well, which seems more fraught, more risky maybe. Mm.
Well, Lincoln and Catherine, you two work for or are part of an organization that in many ways has overlaps with what the mission of One Small Step is, Braver Angels. I'm hoping you both can kind of tag team this one and tell us about it and how Braver Angels is both similar and different from the work that's being done here.
It's very similar in the mission to model and give people the opportunity to practice having disagreement that takes the apprehension out of it, that gives it somewhere to go, gives it a container to happen in, because so often now in our culture and in our media spaces, it can feel like it's an antagonistic experience to disagree with somebody. So I think that there's a shared mission there of providing people that opportunity of feeling to see it modeled and to feel what it's like to participate in something like that.
I would just add, I think the power of this work, and I come to it, I've been a professional high school teacher and been working with kids on how to have civil discourse. The power of this work is Braver Angels has some skills and strategies that people can use, that they can learn and practice in workshops that we give, and then can apply and use in their daily lives, whether that's with strangers or whether that's with family members or with your spouse. But I found it to be some real practical guides that can help all of us in having difficult conversations and in staying engaged. The key is staying engaged in difficult conversations, because there are not a lot of role models for that in the national scene.
Hmm. Question for the two of you before I go back to our One Small Step participants. So my husband and I, a couple months ago, we had somebody left over in our budget. We were debating what to do with it. This will come around, I promise. And we decided, we had like a family meeting. We sat down together, and our goal was just to hear one another out. He wanted to do something with our basement. I wanted to, you know, do something really fancy schmancy with our garden. And we went into the conversation ostensibly with the goal of hearing what the other person wanted to do and just really thinking on it. But we realized deep down, we were just trying to convince the other person of our plan. We weren't really there to listen. Like, I was pretty confident by the end of the conversation that he was gonna switch sides, and he did. But that's not the point. I'm curious if you find it important for participants in these kinds of conversations to have a common goal, and that could be either we're here to listen or we are here to debate and try to, you know, maybe switch the other person's way of thinking. Or can you have a fruitful conversation if you're coming at it with different goals?
Yeah. One thing that I've heard a lot tonight is the topic of finding common ground, and that I think is such a shared component of both these programs. And one thing I would add to that is that I think what doesn't get said and is so important is the value of our differences, especially in our different points of view. And sometimes I feel like we put the cart before the horse and we're trying to find common ground before we clarify what the differences are and where the value in those differences are. And so, you know, with the question of whether you have an outcome in mind with an interaction, especially when it's about differences, because of those cultural components of that we're just not well practiced and we don't see good modeling of disagreeing in healthy ways, it turns toxic or it's framed as toxic, that having the relational experience where we're not trying to convince one another or get something out of the interaction, where it's not transactional, it's relational, where you build trust, you build relationship, you rehumanize each other, that's such a key starting point, and I think both programs are doing that really well.
Mm-hmm. Relational, not transactional.
I would just add one point. I think one of the fundamental principles of a Braver Angels conversation is accepting the fact that no one can change anyone else's mind. The only person who can change your mind is you. And so the real, the invitation is to be curious, to understand, well, why would you want to spend this money on a fancy schmancy car? Or why would you want to remodel the basement? Can you tell me a little bit more about why this is important to you? So it's really, for me, it's really an invitation to be curious and then to acknowledge someone's point of view, even though you may disagree, as the starting point for building community together. Mm-hmm. So I do also see a lot of overlap. I love the power of the StoryCorps and the one-on-one conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Our garden looks great. let's dive into not necessarily the issues, but the talking about the tough issues. You both, in your conversations, hit on some topics that are particularly hard to talk about right now, ones that might feel intractable. Religion, for example, abortion and reproductive rights and access. Chris and Judy, when you two talked about religion, I'm wondering if you could tell us from both of your perspectives how that felt for you. Was it something you felt nervous to bring up? Was it something you had to work through, or did it feel easy?
I don't want to speak for Chris, but for me, having that opportunity to listen to someone made me really want to work very hard to hear what she had to say. I'm not sure I'm quite as good at doing that with my husband, who's right here.
I don't want to disagree.
But it's there were subjects that we talked about that were very intimate, and it's an unusual situation, I think, to sit down with someone who you don't know at all and talk about things that are very, very important. And certainly the sort of government we want to have. The people who influenced us so much. Those are very intimate topics. Mm-hmm. And I felt very fortunate that Chris is a person who I felt was very open, very intelligent, and very welcoming. of whatever I had to say.
And Ramona and Beth, you two talked about everything from abortion to government spending and debt. Did you find that there were topics that you felt nervous about bringing up going into this conversation?
I don't think there were topics that I felt nervous about as much as I knew from the bios, from what Beth had written, what I had written, that there were some differences in there. And I guess what I wanted to do was to learn how to understand her side of it. And probably there would be some questions back as to why I believed things that I did believe. But also, the more that we got into discussing some of these topics, we found that the base of it, the base of the reasons why we believed what we believed, were actually a lot the same. You know, it was the care for other people, the desire to be able to communicate on that level, rather than just the surface level that has the names or has the titles or something, where you just get a person just gets a picture in their mind automatically. Well, that's the kind of person they are. That's why they believe that. And that isn't true. It isn't ever true. Mm-hmm. So I was always anxious to see what Beth, you know, what her ideas were concerning any of these topics. Mm.
And Beth?
Yeah, I think the way the program is structured, it really fosters a curiosity about the other person. And I certainly appreciated the structure and the prompts. So, for example, I am in favor of abortion rights. And Ramona had said, I am pro-life. Well, you know, pro-life, that's two words. And those are two words that mean very different things to different people, very different things. And you can take that as a label and put all kinds of assumptions on it, you know. And the things that Ramona said about, I am pro-woman, I am in favor of supporting the woman who is trying to make a life for this child, you know, who is struggling and needs support. And that just really spoke to my fundamental beliefs. And hearing her flesh out her opinion just made me feel, you know, I'm still in favor of abortion rights, you know, and I think Ramona probably, you know, I mean, I really want to get to those deeper questions that we never did. Yeah. I hope we'll get to do that. But, you know, I think so much is assumed if you just have some label about an issue, and just being able to hear what somebody really thinks makes a big difference.
Yeah.
As opposed to jumping to conclusions, which we all tend to do.
Mm. And I think that jumping to conclusions can happen much more often when we're in the midst of an election cycle.
For sure.
And those labels are getting thrown at us from every corner. You're being asked again and again, who do you side with? You know, what labels do you use for yourself and your community? And Catherine, I'm curious if you think that there are different strategies for having one of these conversations across political divides. If the approach can be different now that we are past this major election that we just went through, could the tenor of conversations change in any way?
I think it certainly needs to. What came to mind for me hearing that last comment was one of the most important commentaries I've heard recently is that we often make a mischaracterization that when somebody is voting for something different than what we're voting for, that they're voting against what we're voting for, rather than just voting for something else or emphasizing something else. And I think the political environment really brings that to a head, and that we can recognize that in our interactions with people, especially when we're in disagreement, that if we can shift that narrative within ourselves, that somebody emphasizing something different than what we're emphasizing doesn't mean necessarily, and often doesn't mean, that they're against what we're emphasizing. They're just emphasizing something different. And so I think that's one thing that's really important for as we come out of a political environment where everything is so polarized and framed as being polarized and either or, that we can remember that. and that we have an opportunity when the political rhetoric gets ugly to remember that and practice that and model that.
Mm-hmm. And I would just add that, you know, the question in the post-election now, days and months and weeks, what might be the offering, I think it's really, it's about listening. It's about deep listening. And we had co-moderated a statewide event a week ago tonight where we invited people who had voted for Harris or not for Harris, or who either didn't vote at all or voted for a third candidate, to come together with the idea of just beginning to listen to one another, to listen, to understand. And that's a different task than campaigning for your candidate and getting furious when your candidate doesn't win. Well, after the election, there are lots of emotions, but moving forward, I think, and that's one of the invitations of Braver Angels' work, is listen to understand, not to judge, so that we can begin to move forward and still stay engaged.
You're listening to a pre-recorded episode of Vermont Edition. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we are airing a live discussion that took place last week at the Vermont Public Studios in Colchester. It was all about how people in our region are making connections across political lines through our program One Small Step, which is run in conjunction with StoryCorps. Let's keep listening.
Chris and Judy, I heard one of you say during the conversation that we heard, I don't want to ask who you're voting for, but I do want to ask you about what so-and-so issue. Did you end up at any point talking about who you were going to vote for in these elections? And do you think naming those names would have or did make a difference in the conversation that you had?
I think the closest we came to that is that I have always had a policy of voting by secret ballot, but admitting that over the course of conversation, a person might figure out which way I lean.
As Chris said, we didn't discuss that exact thing, but what I found very useful about the way One Small Step was structured, I think has been mentioned before, that we were so encouraged to be curious about each other. So the conversation could have gone anywhere. We had, what was it, an hour to discuss, and we were only able to discuss a little bit of where we might have gone. But what was great about it is that it could have gone anywhere, and I really appreciated that.
I think the thing that we came together on was compassion. And caring about other people. And that goes beyond political divides, just wanting the best for our neighbors, wanting to have a healthy society where everybody is cared, where everybody feels heard and respected. And that's, no matter who wins, it's still our job to be kind, to do what is good.
Yeah.
And to resist anything that's unhealthy and bad.
Ramona and Beth, I'd like to ask you the same question that I just asked Chris and Judy about naming names, talking about who you're voting for. Did that feel like something that you wanted to have be part of the conversation, or would that have hindered the connections you were trying to make?
Well, we didn't get anywhere close to it, you know, not even like Judy and Chris did, but I guess I didn't really care, and I wasn't interested in who Beth was going to vote for, because she would vote for the person that in her mind was going to do the job that she wanted. As for myself, she couldn't have asked me, because I didn't decide until the night before, I think. No one candidate could fulfill, you know, everything could fulfill that any person wants. There's some things that that this candidate is good for, and there's some things that this one would like. And it's just very hard for me sometimes to say, okay, who's going to do the best for the country? So that's where I was. We didn't talk about it at all.
And Beth?
Right. The names never came up, and I'm very glad they didn't. Yeah. This whole line of questioning makes me realize that I came into this not wanting to talk about the candidates, but to understand another voter. Mm. Yeah. And I think it's important for us to separate who our candidates or our elected leaders are from our fellow voters. You know, that because somebody votes for somebody doesn't equate those two people necessarily. And that, you know, everybody has their own reasons for voting the way they do, and those reasons are complicated and maybe, you know, conflicted. And for us to judge each other, I mean, this kind of gets to what Lincoln was saying about, you know, where is the emphasis? And it's just not black and white. And I came into this wanting to understand another voter and not debate candidates. Yeah. So.
Lincoln and Catherine, we are heading into the Thanksgiving holiday. And a lot of us have that one person in our family who we are nervous about sitting at the table with, about having that tough conversation that we've maybe had already a number of times over the past few years and haven't gotten any headway with, and we know it's going to be tough again. I wonder if you could each share one piece of advice from the Braver Angels playbook as we head into this holiday that is focused on gathering with those we love, even if they're not people we agree with necessarily. One piece of advice for reopening a conversation.
There'll be 27 people at our Thanksgiving gathering, all ages, the youngest being 8 months and the oldest being 80 years old. And one thing that we have done in the past is that has been very helpful is we start with a gratitude circle, and everyone goes around and says what they're grateful for. It's always so moving and instructive because we to listen to one another. And voices of gratitude are not political; they're human. They're about having another year of life or having a new baby or being together in community. That's always been really helpful. And if political conversations arise later in the weekend, we have that foundation moving forward where we've made a personal connection. And one thing that's been helpful for me, if I know there's someone that I have a particular difficulty because of his or her political views, after that gratitude circle, I go up to that person and I make an effort to just reconnect with them individually, one-on-one, knowing that that might be helpful if later on in the weekend, after too many pieces of pie or too many glasses of wine, the conversation may go in another direction.
Thank you. Lincoln?
Yeah, there's two things that I would add. One is that the atmosphere is so alarmist often that we feel like things are catastrophic and that the sky is going to fall if what we feel certain about doesn't happen. Mm. And so to remember to try to find ways to take that edge off, that everything is not always going to be a catastrophe if we don't get our way or if the other person does get their way. And then the other thing I would say is that to remember, especially when we're in a situation where we have that minority perspective present in a family gathering, whether it's the Trump voter in a liberal family or that Harris voter in a conservative family, that it's so easy to get reactionary and defensive when you're an outsider and when you feel like you're going to get attacked for your perspective. Mm-hmm. And what I would invite people to do is to think about what you value about their perspective. So if you have an outsider who's a liberal or progressive, to really find a way to give voice to valuing their generosity or their idealism. And if you have a conservative or a libertarian in your family, to really find voice for why you value their pragmatism or why they value conservatism or traditionalism, to really just soften that edge so that people don't have to feel defensive and like they need to explain themselves to each other, but that we can get back to just enjoying that we have diversity of perspective in our families.
Thank you.
And I can speak as a Vermonter that we have 1 in 3 Vermonters voted for Trump in the last 3 election cycles. And in a lot of Vermont, it can feel like it's 1 in 30 people. And it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to be an outsider as a Trump voter, as a Republican, as somebody who's a conservative. And it's so there are different dimensions to that. And it's a real challenge to put a value proposition out as an organizer to say it's worth sticking your neck out, it's worth, you know, revealing yourself in your community as somebody who's going to get jumped all over, because there tends to be this very heavy and often false consensus feeling socially that everybody's in agreement even when they aren't. So there's a lot of self-censoring that happens, and it's a real issue of culture that I'm hopeful here in Vermont with the changes in the state house, with not having a supermajority, that culture will shift some.
One thing that has really given me hope this election season was the hour that I spent hosting Vermont Edition on the Thursday after the election. I was really nervous for that conversation. We opened up our phone lines and we said, call in with your thoughts about the election. And I was nervous for so many reasons. I didn't know what people were going to say. I knew, you know, tensions were high. People were feeling their deep feelings. I didn't want anyone listening to feel hurt by what somebody else said. And I was also really nervous that we were going to just get one side of the story and that it was going to be an hour of people saying the same thing over and over again. And we weren't really going to get anywhere. And that I was going to leave that hour feeling like, you know, what was the point? And it was not that. I was blown away, and I have been hosting this show almost every day for 3 years, and that conversation will stick with me forever, because we heard from all sorts of people. We heard from Trump voters and Harris voters, but I think more importantly, we heard from people in Vermont who are really reckoning with this local election and reckoning with what their vote locally meant for the first time. And a lot of people voted in split tickets for the first time. We had a lot of people saying, you know, I have never voted this way before, but I did, and it doesn't match how I voted for president, and I'm kind of figuring out what to do with that. And it was so heartening, frankly. But I think that those conversations are happening. So I'm not too worried about Vermont. I think these things are happening here, and I feel really lucky to be one small part of a media landscape that feels really focused on community.
That conversation took place at Vermont Public Studios in front of a live audience last week. To get involved in One Small Step in Vermont, visit vermontpublic.org/onesmallstep. To learn more about Braver Angels, visit braverangels.org. StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station Hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Special thanks this hour to Karen Anderson, Betty Smith, and Amy Zielinski. Tomorrow, we're going to air special Thanksgiving programming. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone who celebrates. If a story idea pops up around your table this year, email it to us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Vermont Edition is going to be back with more live shows next week. On Monday, we're going to celebrate the first ever National Hockey League game played in the U.S. between the NHL's Boston Bruins and the Montreal Maroons. Mitch Wortley will be in the host seat for that one. Our managing producer is John Ahrens. Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro are our producers. Our theme music is by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.